You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Some people remember high school as a really great time, but if you're one of those people who remember it as a miserable time, if you were awkward and insecure and hadn't really figured out who you were yet, you're far from alone. So we tend to dismiss the high school years and move on. But in this week's New York Magazine, contributing editor Jennifer Senior writes that high school may be one of the most toxic environments possible for a vulnerable young mind, leaving permanent scars. Her cover story in the new issue of that magazine is called Why You Truly Never Leave High School, and she joins me now to talk about it. Welcome to our show, Jennifer.
It's lovely to be here. Thanks so much. One quick thing. It was last week's cover, so if you're looking for it on the newsstands, you won't find it. You should probably go to our website.
And people might be confused because the cover
says
High School is a Sadistic Institution.
Yeah.
You have two different titles. Which
correct.
One do you like
online.
Better?
I'm not a big fan of the word sadistic. I think it's a little strong, so I would go with the other one.
By the way, if listeners want to join in on this conversation, I'm sure you all have wonderful experiences. Remember high school? The prom was just so great. You can give us a call at 212-433-9692 or write us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter. You tell the story of a classmate named Kenji going to your 25th high school reunion. What happened?
So Kenji, at the time he was Andy, and he was closeted. He was a bassoon player in the orchestra, smartest kid in the class, graduated number one, and kept to himself. I knew him. You know, the kids who were kind of in the honors circuit knew him, and pretty much no one else. At the reunion, he's been called Kenji since he came out, and he grabbed the handsomest football player, who was still handsome, by his tricep, which was still enormous, and said, "Hey, where's the after party?" And he went along. He tagged along. I mean, he's now a very confident, charming, and of course he's a very handsome guy.
But in high school, he might very well have been punched in the nose if he said something like that.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
The world has changed as well. But you also don't mention where you went to high school. I would assume that there are regional differences.
There are. And not only that, but some of the feedback has been very helpful because, you know, of course, I think it's different if you go – number one, to a school that's, say, you know, same sex, I think that it can be easier for people if you're not organizing your personality around trying to get the attention of the opposite sex. If, you know, you're at a school where a competitive school where it pays to be smart, or you're at a specialty school where everyone wants to be, you know, an artist or a dancer.
Or a private school or religious
yeah,
school.
Yeah, exactly. Parochial school. I mean, they come with their own sort of. But anyway, I was at a big bland public, not bland. I mean, it was homogenous, upper middle class public high school.
I wonder if this is something that we could also be talking about if we were in England or France or Germany or Buenos Aires.
Interesting you say that. I was having a conversation about this with Mimi Ito, who is an anthropologist who looks at both internet use and also does a lot of work in Japan. And in Japan, she said, you know, smart kids don't suffer like they do here. It's a value in the culture at large, and therefore in high school, it is not the same kind of liability. I think there are going to be differences.
And smart kids suffer here? Do you think that it's harder for girls than boys if they're smart?
Well, it's harder for girls. Self-esteem in high school among girls are lower generally across the board. And if you're
they always seem more mature.
I know, but their self-esteems are not as far ahead. So at least in the data that I've seen. One of the exciting things that I found in my story is that smart girls in high school have lower self-esteems than the kind of princessy girls. But by the time they're 24, and most likely when they're 40, the researchers who looked at this suspect this will be the case, they have higher self-esteem, which I thought was very interesting. And they had a reason if you want to talk about it.
Sure. Well, I want to bring in a case that I know about, a friend's daughter who's very smart. The boy who really liked her was very smart but considered kind of weird and geeky by everybody else. She lusted after the kind of dumb, dangerous guys, even though she's incredibly smart. She knows this is not good for her, and they're not going to be interested in her. But
we all did. I mean, that's such a painful thing to hear. I'm doing a deep body flinch just listening to it. Let me tell you about the trajectory of the smart girls, because it's a wonderful and interesting thing. So here's the thing. The princessy girls, the beautiful girls, wind up learning in high school that they can be very passive in their habits. They are admired for things that they are admired for things that they are, and not things that they do. So they're admired for looking good and having great clothes and all that.
Even if they're smart.
Well, you know, that's a hard. I mean, it's
there are smart girls who are also princessy.
I'm trying to think. I mean, in my school, was that true? I mean, yes, you are right. And you're also allowed to be smart up until a point. You know, I think that what data shows is that there's kind of a leveling off of how smart you're allowed to be before things get treacherous and that becomes the thing that sticks. But I think what I was going to say is, and what I found very interesting, is that that passivity that the beautiful girls learn, if they don't define themselves by their brains, if they don't define, if that's not their definition, where they draw esteem, when they get out into the world, they're still passive. They have not learned how to make life happen for themselves. Whereas the smart girls were quietly like making things happen for themselves all along. They were getting A's. So then they get out in the world and, you know, they're.
Of course, there is a difference also if you go to a school like Stuyvesant or Brooklyn Tech or
totally.
Bronx High School of Science, or if you go to one of the neighborhood schools.
Yeah. If you want to talk about one of the major failings of my piece, it's that I didn't actually look at specialty schools like this. I mean, and I can't really speak to those experiences.
Well, let's get back to the other side of this story. There are all these movies that take place during the high school years, and there's this reminiscence bump when Channel 13 wants to raise money. They suddenly have a doo-wop special, even though there's no other time that you can imagine them ever do anything with doo-wop. So it's reminiscence bumps, and then there's the whole business of people still being attached to the music that they listened to when they were in school.
Okay, so this is very interesting that adults disproportionately remember things that happened to them between the ages of 15 and 25. Those are when your memories are most vivid, and they happen to coincide with the adolescent years. And what's going on then biologically is your prefrontal cortex is still developing, and that's the part of the brain that actually is responsible for reasoning and controlling your impulses. And sort of dialing back your anxiety. So if you imagine that between 15 and 25, you are still feeling things much more intensely. Oh, there's also more dopamine sloshing around your system at that age. So you are feeling things more intensely and like processing things with more intensity.
When you're trying to work out your own identity.
When you're trying to work out your own identity. That's right. So that is a particular. So, yes, I mean, I still perk up when I hear the music of Duran Duran, which is lousy music. But, hey, you know, that was during those years for me. And so.
What about the years before you're 15?
Years, but well, I mean, I had a number of people write in and say, no, you've got this all wrong. It was middle school. And it's hard to quarrel with that because middle school is really terrible, too.
I had a worse time in junior high.
Yeah, I've had many people say that. And again, if I were going to try and do a redo on my story, I would probably examine that more. And all I can say is that, I mean, yes, you know, these are imprecise windows, 15 to, you know, for some people, it's going to be 12 to 24 or, yeah, you know.
Kirk from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Leonard. Long-time listener, first-time caller, and hello to your guest.
What's taken you so long, Kirk?
I just retired, and I usually work, and I wasn't able to listen to the radio at work.
Leonard is bullying you. He was clearly a bully in high school. Don't listen to him.
Yes, yeah, Leonard was, yes.
I was not a bully.
I believe it.
Ahead.
I don't think so.
Well, here's my dilemma. I'm 64 years old now, but back in the 60s, in 1964, 65, et cetera, I was gay, but yet I hid it. I never came out as gay, but I was pretty accomplished that I was in student government all 4 years, including president of the senior class where there were 400 students. I was in the top 10 of my class academically, went on to Harvard, and actually had a boyfriend on the side at another school. And we kept that hush-hush. But if I would have come out as gay back then, I don't think I would have, and I was also runner-up to Homecoming King, that I would have been mocked, and none of this stuff would have been, I would never have accomplished some of these things.
Okay, but Kirk,
things are different today.
Well, I was going to ask you, do you think things are different today?
Well,
there may be more acceptance, but I'm not sure you would have gotten all of those those things, a runner-up to Homecoming King. If you had come out as gay, the kids would have liked you perhaps more today or not given you as hard a time.
I don't know. I mean, I think the words back then that I heard, you know, we're talking about 45 to 50 years ago. You know, I hear people tell jokes about fags and things like that. And so I just don't know if it's different. And I don't have any relatives who are gay that I know of whose kids are school. But then you watch TV like a show Glee and they have like characters that are way out there that are gay on their sleeves.
So, I think Glee is a fantasy of high school. I hear a lot of kids saying that's so gay, and they do not mean it as a compliment.
And they said it when I was a kid too. And I have to say, I think Leonard, I think your instincts are dead on. I think they're right because, I mean, this is something I actually do know. One of the sociologists in my story, a fellow named Rob Krosno, who's at UT, he's looked at the outcomes of, you know, broad longitudinal outcomes for gay kids in Texas and Austin, you know, public schools, and they're still not as good. Their self-esteem still suffer. And so, which is interesting, if you live in a place like New York and if you watch shows like Glee and Will and Grace, you know, it seems hard to believe. And if your, you know, colleagues and bosses are gay, it seems improbable to you that this could still be like such a terrible stigma at school. But of course it still is. We know this, you know.
Well, these years are also the years when we're changing physically.
Yes.
Girls in some ways. Boys, it often is a matter of bulk and height. How important are those things?
Very.
What have researchers discovered about height in high school?
So this is really interesting, too. We have long known that if you're an adult, your earning power as a man correlates with height. That's been demonstrated.
That hasn't worked with me. I'm 6'1".
Outliers on every graph. What can I tell you? Part of your charm. But I think that this has been replicated over and over again. Somebody, though, I guess it was a quartet of somebodies, is that right? Or at least three economists. I'm forgetting, you know, what's what. But they thought in 2004 to actually look at this question slightly differently and figure out, is it your adult height that matters? Or is it how tall you were when you were 16? And the answer is, it's how tall you were when you were 16. So the fact is, if you're 6'1", I mean, then I guess I could ask you, were you short when you were in high school? Right?
Well, I actually put on a couple of inches when I entered college.
Yeah.
But I was somewhere in the middle. I don't think height was all that important.
Right. I mean, you can never look at these.
I mean, we did talk about it.
Right. And you can't look at these, you know, case by case. You have to look at broad, you know, kind of
groups. Often the tallest kid became shorter as everybody else grew up taller.
And also, of course, being tall, too tall if you're a girl is another problem. But I'll tell you, for women, you know, especially, body image is a very big deal. I mean, if you were heavy as an adolescent and even if you got skinny as an adult, that trailed you too.
What have researchers discovered about whether someone will marry or not?
Yeah, if you're more beautiful in high school, your odds are marrying. That you will marry. They're better.
Very early.
Earlier, I think they also increase just period that you will. Even if, you know, again, just to point, even if, you know, you bloom and become gorgeous or you even were back then but not labeled as such.
There's a lot of research being done. Do we have different attitudes? The researchers find different things than they did, let's say, in 1976 when Ralph Keyes wrote about high school life. Is there life after high school?
I'm sorry. Can you just – I'm not sure I know what you mean.
I'm wondering whether In the 70s or the 60s when people wrote about high school kids, whether they were pretty much talking about these same things.
Sorry, right. So, I mean, what's interesting is that some categories endure, which is that, you know, I think this is the question you're asking, that, like, you know, jocks remain at the top of the heap. That's never gone away. The beautiful girls, that's never gone away. The kind of cheerleadery stuff, you know. The
William Inge's play, Picnic, which is now on Broadway, is all about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of stunning how durable those categories are. On the other hand, I'll tell you, you know, there are things that they never took into account, like, you know, first of all, ethnicity. You know, it was a less diverse nation then. And our studies are still actually lagging behind in that way, that the large longitudinal samples of looking at, you know, high school students were starting at a time when America was much whiter still. So that's probably one area to look for. And again, also, I think that the point that the caller made, I mean, we are more, you know, it's a more diverse America. So things will ultimately change, I think, you know, probably for the better.
Mark from New York City, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, yes. I have a question. My daughter is going into ninth grade, going into high school this coming year. And my wife went to Catholic all-girls school, and my daughter was interested in testing for it. She tested, got aced the courses, you know, aced the test, whatever, was given a merit scholarship. We just got this all this last week that she was given half tuition for it. She's all excited about it. Our concerns are on two different aspects of it, socially and also just opportunities. She's very artistically oriented. She's done a lot of theater. She's very interested in theater. Both wife and I are performers. She's also very interested in visual arts. She's an amazing designer. She's also brilliant academically. Her public school has phenomenal opportunities for the arts, more opportunities than what the Catholic school does. The Catholic school is phenomenal academically and has some opportunities in the arts. We are concerned whether or not socially is the best thing for her. Right now, she certainly is feeling somewhat more of an outcast in the public school. It is a well-to-do area, and it very much suffers from much of what you're talking about right now.
Well, you know, there is LaGuardia High School, and there are other schools that are just perfect for kids like that if you decide to go to public schools. But if she goes to a Catholic school, she may, in a few years, be able to talk about being one of the last people to go to a Catholic school. So she could write that book.
You know, I hear what you're saying. And that sounds like a very difficult dilemma. I wish that I'd had room in my story to say all the things that I wanted to parents. So can I just fire off a couple of things? For starters, and obviously you're going to do this anyway, if she comes into contact with other high school students outside of her high school who are really into the performing arts, she will have some other safe harbor elsewhere, and high school will not be the same freighted, all-consuming experience that it is for other kids, right? So any other external outlet, even community theater, whatever it is, it's lucky she's great at something. And also, if she's going to a new place, it's a clean slate, which is always wonderful. The other thing is that if she remains an outcast, one thing that I found very helpful that I got from Brené Brown, the shame researcher, who I quote in my story, she said that when parents you know, hear these stories about kids being teased, they tend to get very defensive, or their instincts are to say, who is that bully who hurt you? I'm going to go and I'm going to beat the crap out of them. When really what you should do is tell your story, tell your kid exactly the way that you are an outlier, so that they don't feel alone and like they are the only, like they don't even fit into their own house because they're so unworthy of belonging and fellowship.
My guest is Jennifer Senior. Her article, Why You Truly Never Leave High School, was the cover story in last week's New York Magazine. We have a link to it, by the way, on our show page in case you didn't get a copy of the magazine. And when we come back, I want to address that headline, why you truly never leave high school, because we kind of skirted around it, but we didn't really address it. We're back with Jennifer Senior, an odd name for somebody who's written an article about high school. Her article, Why You Truly Never Leave High School, was the cover story in last week's New York Magazine and includes some wonderful photographs of famous people, their high school pictures, most of them totally surprising. The big thing, I guess, that we notice immediately is the hair.
The hair. It's always about the hair. And also, yeah, well, and if it was the 1980s, you came of age with, you know, 15 cubic liters of teased hair. You know, you were very roosterly in your appearance. So there's some of that.
Only two or three of these people look like they look today. I would say Amy Adams, Jeremy Lin.
Well, it's no accident. You're also choosing people who are quite young.
Bill Clinton.
Bill Clinton looks like himself. And I thought that Jack Nicholson looked like Leonardo DiCaprio. Which is an interesting, I mean, unless it's just the photo.
The biggest shock is Sean Penn. But this, who looks totally goofy here. But anyway, let's talk about that that title, You Never, Why You Truly Never Leave High School. So we go to high school and then we move on to college or to a job at somewhere down the line, and we become the person we think we are for the rest of our life. But you're saying high school is there, whether we want it to be there or not?
Well, I was talking about, I think the headline was talking also about two different things. One is something that you and I have already discussed, which is that because your brain is still, you know, forming and you're feeling things very intensely at that time and also feeling things very anxiously, labels that get thrown at you stick in a way that's very profound, and they you know, get swept into your identity in a way that might not happen when you're older or when you're much younger. That's half of it. The other half...
You mean the way we dress, for example?
Well,
because we do tell people a lot about who we are by our haircut, by the clothing we wear. Oh, of course, you can get a different kind of hairstyle and you can wear different kinds of clothes.
Yeah, I don't think anybody would want to say that they haven't evolved since high school. I think it's more the kind of impressions that we carry around of ourselves. I would say, I think that that's the psychological piece of it. The actual, much more literal kind of social architecture piece of it is something separate, which is the idea that, and I should back up and say, I would always call, whenever I spoke to sociologists or specialists in adolescence, I would say to them, tell me, why are brains or cellists or kids in the marching, you know, the marching band geeks, why are they disliked in high school? Like, what is it that makes them like fat targets? And finally, a fellow named Lawrence Sternberg, Larry Sternberg, who's brilliant, said to me, well, you know, adults don't really love intellectuals either, and adults don't really love cellists, and adults don't really, I mean, they do in New York, but not everywhere.
Well, we admire some people for their achievement, but sure, that's not the same thing as saying, I'd love to have dinner with that person.
Right. And also, I mean, I think it's a question, again, of you how portable you are. You can find communities that totally treasure what you do. But I think just whether America as a whole values it. So I think the larger point then became, like, are adult values high school values? And also, do we see those high school behaviors being replicated in the adult world? And one of the sociologists who I spoke to, a guy named Rob Ferris, who's also very, very smart, pointed out that he thinks that any time a group of strangers are thrown into a big box, even in adulthood, when there is no real discernible hierarchies, they're going to do what high schoolers do.
And that's interesting because Joshua from Westfield, New Jersey, wants to talk about that. Hi, Joshua.
Hello.
Yes, Joshua.
Hi. I just want to relate a story from about a year ago, which is right in line with your topic. And I was at a corporate reunion at a big company. And, you know, you have the stereotypes in high school, the marching band, the nerds, the jocks, et cetera, et cetera. And you've got your stereotypes in the corporate world, too, the overachievers, the career-minded folks, et cetera, et cetera. And we're at this meeting, and it's 20 years. And a friend of mine looks to me, and he says, look at the room. He goes, we're in high school again. And the point of the story was that 20 years had gone by, and the same cliques that existed in that corporate world 20 years ago were still in this room 20 years later. And I thought it's amazing, and I do agree with it, you never leave high school because once you're in a clique, once you're in a group, you're in there forever for the most part.
I really appreciate that. And I actually, you know, it's funny you say this because the most brutal examples that I hear about this are often in business settings. I mean, as I was doing my reporting, one of the researchers was telling me about, you know, you'll be in an office, you'll have the highest quarterly earnings, and what you'll do is be asked to kick out, you know, some guy from his office because you want his office. That, like, kind of that kind of bullying isn't. And I'm not saying that it only happens in corporate settings. Believe me, it happens in media settings where I work too. It's just very interesting that these groupings don't tend to, you know, they tend to stick.
Yeah, well, I tend to hang out with the same sorts of people as an adult that I did in high school.
Me too.
Luckily, as an adult, I can meet more of them.
Well,
in high school, I had a limited choice.
You have a choice. And you can move to a city where there's lots of them.
Deborah left this comment on Facebook. She said, I was really poor, a poor kid in an ultra-rich high school. It affected my self-esteem greatly. And when I became a parent, I made sure that we lived in a strictly middle-class neighborhood to spare my children. I've never attended a reunion because there wasn't anyone there that I wanted to see again.
Yeah, good for her. And I totally hear her on that. Again, you know, the socioeconomic diversity question is really interesting because, of course, in suburban high schools, there doesn't tend to be as much variation as there are in some urban areas, and it just depends. And again, you know, it's interesting. I don't think that many of these studies were organized as much around class as they probably could have been. And by default, the people who were kind of named the toughs or the criminals might have been kids who actually had less means, fewer means.
Julie from the Bronx, hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. I have a question about children who don't go to school. Are there any studies or have you looked into how this lack of being in high school would affect homeschoolers?
No, it's a remarkably good question. I guess, you know, I shouldn't say that those studies don't exist. It's very hard to get good data on the homeschooling population because, I mean, almost by definition, they're not in any trackable system. I guess they theoretically are. I guess the state sort of has to know where they are. But I have not seen any good data on that. I know it's often used as a justification for homeschooling. I mean, what parents of homeschooled kids will frequently say is that their reservations are actually social. I mean, they're being grilled by people saying, how come you're not letting your children socialize? And they say, exactly, you know, because other kids are, you know, are horrible, you know, and I'd rather that my kids spent time in the company of adults, which is how it used to be.
All right. Okay, thank you.
Thank you for calling. During the election campaign, it came out that Mitt Romney bullied another kid. And it was kind of like the reaction of supporters was, well, boys will be boys.
Right.
And to some degree, that does make sense. Those kids, the ones who did that kind of bullying, were often among the most popular kids in the school.
Oh, yeah. What was interesting about that story, though, I think, is that, I mean, I thought it did a lot of damage. I mean, I say this as a Democrat, but I think it did do some damage in the sense that I think most people, when they look back on high school, even if they were bullies themselves, they tend to feel as if they were kind of made fun of in some ways. They remember their vulnerability so much that I think most people tend to feel like they were the kid who was getting their hair cut or getting beaten up on. So that most people identify with the victim in that story, even if they were the perpetrator. And if they were the perpetrator, what's interesting is how many former bullies walk around with shame. Because, I mean, think about it. In the Washington Post, a bunch of those guys came clean on the record nearly half a century later to say how bad they felt about having done that stuff with Mitt Romney.
Brené Brown was a guest on the show a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I wasn't here for that conversation. It was a guest host, but I heard that she was just terrific. We can sneak one more caller in. Lauren from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm a teacher in high school. I've been teaching for 12 years. And I think that the big difference that I see between high school and myself as a high schooler and adults is really confidence. I think that kids in high school really, really lack confidence. Neurologically, they're not able to identify themselves separate from their peers the way adults can. And as an adult, you kind of grow out of that need for approbation from your peers. And, of course, you still have, you have your own now adult peers, but you become more of a singularity in and of yourself, and you're not thrown into this pit where you need to find the hierarchical structure. So I really think that confidence is the big difference. As an adult, you can be confident. I'm a cellist, and I'm an avid reader, and I love Leonard Lopey, and I can say that to anybody at my high school reunion and be totally cool with it and not feel, you know, wonder how people are going to respond to it, what do other people think
about
my life choices.
One of the only things that ties all the kids in high school together is that they're of the same age.
Yeah.
And that isn't enough of a reason to gather a whole bunch of people together. One listener says that it's easy to spot the people in a small town anyway who are going to move away and the ones who are going to stay.
Yes, and that actually ties into what the caller just said. And by the way, I'm so glad that you're actually – I mean, it sounds like you're really sensitive, and therefore I'm very happy that you're taking care of high schoolers. Yes, I think that what happens when in adulthood is you gain confidence, but also you make choices that enable you to find your own people.
Did any of the researchers you talked to have ideas about how to improve the high school experience?
I actually none of the researchers that I spoke to, but you know, some Yuri Bronfenbrenner, who is one of the co-founders of Head Start, a Russian-born psychologist, big name in the 70s, he wrote this book back in the 70s that did make the point that, you know, I mean, he was romanticizing Russia at the time, but he had gone to Russia for a while and looked at the education system there and was blown away at how much time children spent with adults versus how much time children spend with adults here. And, I mean, one thing you could easily say is that high schoolers should just spend more time in adult company.
Just one more question. Anna Freud, Sigmund Freud's daughter, who specialized on these years, the teen years, said that the teenage years were a form of psychosis.
That's interesting. Adam Phillips, a psychoanalyst in Britain, said that puberty is your first experience of sentient madness. So there you go. Yeah.
And Jennifer Senior's article is Why You Truly Never Leave High School. We have a link to it on our show page at WNYC.org. Or if you have access to last week's issue of New York Magazine, you might want to check it out. There are some fabulous photographs of famous people, their high school pictures in the article. The headline on the cover is High School is a Sadistic Institution. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.